You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. I'm recording this in a hotel room in Manhattan shortly before the last sound check of the last show of our fall 2021 tour at Le Poisson Rouge. This tour with Worriers and the Dirty Mill has been a beautiful return to a semblance of normalcy. Touring was one of the first things to go and is currently one of the last things to come back. Touring the pandemic has been a novel and difficult experience with unforeseen problems and sometimes, you know, paralyzing clouds of uncertainty and dread. But, and a big but, it has been beautiful and inspiring, and I will never take it for granted again. It feels so goddamn good to be back. It is incredible to see how excited people are to be experiencing live music again. I'm wrapping up some writing about the entire experience, which I'll be posting at futurefriday.net. I have a lot that I would like to share with you about at-home rapid antigen testing and what it can mean for a future at home and play and work and tour and life and yada yada, as well as, you know, how we navigated this entire thing and what it was like to be on tour. But yes, I would like to thank Worriers and the Dirty Mill so much for touring with us and for Roger Harvey for stepping in the last couple of shows. Here in the first in-person podcast in 18 months and the first multiple-person episode, my conversation with the Dirty Mill.
And now this one's recording. Hell yeah, welcome.
Hey,
welcome
thanks.
To the mall in downtown Philly.
That's
where I've always wanted to be.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny, this was a dilapidated mall called The Gallery for so long, and it was just real shitty, and then it was closed for a couple of years, and then one day just opened up this.
So is it called, are we in the Fashion District, or do they just call the mall Fashion District?
They just call the mall the Fashion District.
That's funny.
Okay. Yeah, there's not really a Fashion District. It costs like Walnut Street is just all where... There's every clothing store shop, which burned, basically, in June. So.
Oh, wow.
Dang it.
Stuff's gone.
Jeez. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. People look fly in Philly, though. We walked from Rittenhouse over here.
So. Oh, it's fantastic. That's great.
Lots of vibes. Lots of good vibes on the street.
Oh, yeah.
Hell, yeah. So this is not only the first podcast I'm doing in person in 18 months, so thank you for being the first guest. I'm stoked. That's also the first I'm doing with multiple guests.
Oh, sick.
So, hell, yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully it won't run off the rails and we just start screaming and talking over each other. But you guys, you guys came to my house last night for a Halloween party.
Hell yeah. Tour.
It was the first time that we got to have people over because we moved in right before everything shut down. And it's also the first time that I had a couple beers in a while. And I'm hungover. So my first question to you guys is, what is your hangover cure?
Sometimes exercise is actually very helpful.
Sweating it out?
But yeah. I like, give me a coffee and like... this morning I just got up and got a coffee and then got like a cart sandwich, like just a bacon, egg, and cheese.
Nice.
Roll. Let's go.
Yeah, hell yeah.
A bacon, egg, and cheese is the cure, but I'm pretty sure cucumbers are the best natural source of electrolytes. So if you eat a cucumber first thing in the morning when you're hungover, doesn't matter if you throw it up right after. As long as you take a half hour nap, you'll wake up and nothing happened.
No, it's shit. Amazing. That's the first that I've heard of that
cucumber.
One. I've heard pickles, yeah. Which is, you know, like a processed cucumber. But
yeah.
Yeah. Luke, you got one?
Just working out and being quiet.
Yeah, I've asked that to that question to everybody who's been on the podcast so far, and I've gotten ones of like, eat a raw tomato, similar to a cucumber. I heard about in Russia, you just eat, I think, like pickled fish,
mm-hmm.
like sardines. Maybe that lives in the electrolyte realm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's something in there.
Yeah, there's something in there.
Hey, it works for them.
Hell yeah. I think half of it is just telling yourself it's going to work.
Yeah. Confidence is like the other part.
The will
totally.
To live is is the best way to get it.
That's a really good point, the will to live. Like, I think exercise fits in that way. If you've proved yourself that you can do the exercise, then you're kind of like, well, I already did the hardest thing.
Did some push-ups. That ought to just might subtract those 12 beers from last night.
Yeah. But sometimes I also find that you, like, do the exercise and you're like, oh, like, while you're in it, you're like, oh, this isn't so bad. And then, like, 10 minutes after you stop, it comes raging back in.
Twice as hard.
Yeah.
I like to put on a pair of dress shoes. So that, you know, will necessitate wearing nicer clothes. So it's kind of doing the psychological thing of upping yourself a little bit. And everywhere you walk, it's like a click, like you have purpose, you know?
Yeah. Nice. Like, you dress how you want to feel.
Yeah, exactly. Dress how you want to feel. That's not what my grandma had in mind when she told me to dress for the job that you want to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hungover guy in some random city.
Dress for the state of being you wish to have.
Yeah. Hell yeah. So this tour that we're doing is coming to an end. It's been awesome to have you guys on so far. You're probably my favorite straight up, like, rock and roll band to watch live, for sure. The stage presence is incredible. And I just want to ask, how did you develop it? Like, I know it seems like it just comes as second nature. You do something over and over again, and you just feel the music or whatever. But you guys have a real, like, rapport with the crowd that is just incredible. And just, like, the physicality and the amount of space that you guys take up is fantastic.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. And again, I'd just like to reciprocate. Thank you so much for taking us out on this glorious tour of the United States of America, Northeastern region mostly. But I mean, we grew up on, we're the first YouTube generation. So we grew up on, we digested rock and roll through YouTube when the icon was actually like an old television. Like, that's,
you know?
And so we would just watch, like, the way that I got into music personally mostly was through, I mean, I heard Nirvana and I saw the photos and all that stuff, but the bands that I really, really got into were the bands that I connected with visually, and it was all bands that looked like they were having fun. And it was like, even though they, there's a great Pete Townsend line, never let the music stand in the way of the show. But I mean, watching like The Kids Are All Right, that Who movie, really blew our minds. And, you know, watching videos of like At the Drive-In and the MC5 and people just doing cool showboaty shit on stage and not really, you know, that's why I never got into Cream, because they just stand there and look at their goddamn fingers. And I just can't, I couldn't care less about what kind of a racket they're making if they're just all, you know. So, I mean, what I think also just, you know, having fun is the most important thing, as kind of cookie cutters that sounds, is you gotta have fun. You gotta try and, I think usually if you walk out into a crowd, you're playing to a crowd and there's a few people that know you, but most people don't know you. You kind of have to form the momentum of how the whole thing's going to go. And, you know, you have to show from the very beginning that, like, we're going to have a good time. You guys can come along with us and have a good time. This will be a better time if we do this together, rather than like you just watching us like try and nail every single note.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny that you mentioned that it's almost like the equivalent of walking into the cafeteria and beating up the biggest guy. Go out and show them. I think, I forget how you worded it exactly, but show them that you're having a good time and bring them along with it. It's funny when you play a show, and maybe you guys experience this, where the crowd is not coming along.
Oh yeah.
And you start to get like a defensive in my own mind. I'm like, well, it's obviously not my problem.
Yeah.
My fault. It's their fault. They're wrong. And then
these people just have no taste.
They must be boring.
Yeah. No, it is the children who are wrong.
Yeah.
It makes us play harder though. Anytime I see people not moving, I try and I pull at them.
Absolutely.
The key is to not get discouraged.
No.
Yeah.
In the pre-COVID era, still haven't figured out how we're going to navigate this, but like, if people weren't moving, I would just leave the stage and just start touching people's heads.
And that's not lost to the COVID paradigm shift.
No, I hope not either. But once you start like fucking with people a little bit, then people loosen up.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's as I said, the videos that blew our minds when we were kids were, you know, the Who knocking shit over and like laughing about it while they're playing, but also like dominating. And it was like, let's do our best to try and, you know, exude that spirit.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny you mentioned, so much of that stuff is imitation. So much of this, I think everything that everyone does is kind of like seeing what the people around them are doing or mimicking to some degree what somebody's doing. And I remember also, not so much on YouTube, but getting like videos from Gilman Street on eBay, like a VHS of Operation Ivy's last show or whatever and shit like that, and then just seeing people climbing on top of each other doing that, and then trying to mimic it with 50 people at like a VFW, and then just doing like a cargo pull over and over again. Well, if we just make it happen, it'll just manifest.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
totally. I think you guys had a little bit of a beginning similar to ours. Like, how did you? This is two-parter. One is, when did you know this was what you were going to do? And the other is, how did you guys collectively decide that this is what you were going to do?
That's a very good question. I mean, it's, I guess, I don't know.
I don't know if we ever, like, decided. But I remember one day.
We're just here.
Yeah, we just like, put our heads down and close our eyes, and here we are. But I don't know. No, in high school, like, Luke and I were playing with some other friends of ours and, like, doing covers and stuff.
And this is in Hamilton?
In Dundas, Ontario. Small little part of Hamilton, but like the burbs.
Yeah.
And it was like, then Luke and I were the only ones who really wanted to do it. So he was like, you want to start this other band? And we just started jamming like Black Sabbath songs and then this one song that Luke had written. And then just from there, it just kept rolling along.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's certain also benchmarks of when we decided to, like, escalate things where you're, like, kind of forced to be at a crossroads where you're like, well, do we want to just, like, toot around our locality or do we want to, like, you know, basically, you know, really go hard in this direction, which is, you know, thus closing these other doors of, you know, having a regular job and all that stuff. But, I mean... Certainly.
Sometimes I feel like it's a literal crossroads, too. Like, you have an employer who says, if you go on the tour, you're fired.
I've had that happen a few times.
Every time it's like, okay.
Yeah. All right.
I'm pretty sure I can get a job at another Canadian Tire. So. there was I think we have to also credit bands like Pup, who were from our city, who they were the first band that we saw that, I mean, from an exterior point of view, had... a plan where we had like probably, you know, in around about 10 years ago now, we had other bands around Toronto that were just kind of, like, there was a scene of bands, but Pup was the first band that I think we were friends with that was like, okay, well, we're going to go play in the States now. And that was like going to go play on another planet for us. We didn't have any concept of how that would go, and Single Mothers as well. And then so we just like, you know, we just picked their brains. We're like, how do you do all this stuff? Because we're from, as we said earlier, Dundas, Ontario, Canada, which we just didn't really have anyone locally who – I didn't really know anybody else that had toured outside of Canada.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like a lot of us figuring all this out was us being like, oh, you can just do that? Like, oh, you just email a guy and then maybe be like, yeah, I can get you a show.
Yeah, or you trade.
Which I'm sure that's how it is for other people. But
yeah, totally. It's funny, this thing that we do is lacking in a rigid institution. There's no apprenticeship program to be a band.
No, you really just got to do it.
Yeah, some of the biggest artists, you always see, you can pinpoint something back that left them that way. They had access to a recording studio, or they had their parents worked in the music industry. Something like that usually is there loosely, but there's no, like, you can't go to college for this and then get an apprenticeship with someone. But it does loosely become an institution. Like you mentioned, bands like Pup open up doors in the area. They introduce you to people. And the same thing happened for us with bands like The Bouncing Souls and Gaslight Anthem and stuff when we were coming up. That just kind of was like, hey, partially take us under their wing, but also like, this is the person you talk to here. This is the person you talk to there.
Yeah.
It just makes itself.
Yeah. And it's kind of, it's just a series of those things. And I think that it's kind of true of almost any profession or any job that is desirable to have, like playing music, is, you know, it's important to remember for the people on the outside that like 9 decisions out of 10 are usually bad decisions, but you just have to keep going basically the whole
and then
time.
Not make it again.
Yeah, just try not to make the same mistake twice, but like you're going to make a lot of mistakes. You're going to hit a lot of dead ends. Most of your emails won't be answered. Like you have to claw your way up and be kind and keep moving forward. And eventually good things start happening if you work hard.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's funny, I always joke about being a musician in a little bit of a self-deprecating way of how aloof you can be compared to like any other job or like followed passion, where half the battle for a lot of bands is getting them to come to a show on time or like actually follow a schedule.
It's
like once you get past a lot of that, it kind of becomes easier in some regard.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Especially when you have people like help you.
Exactly.
Just be like, hey, don't forget about that thing. And you're like, oh yeah, that's important.
Oh yeah, you mean that thing that I have to do or this will all fail.
Yeah.
Or like when you're like, you know, when you're like, oh, I can't remember this person's name, and someone's like, that's this person, this is where they work. You're like, oh, thank you, okay.
Yeah, even that. Love it. I figured we could talk about music all day, but I know you guys have some passions and some things that really spark your curiosity outside of music. You guys are photographers, which is fantastic, yeah. And I'd love to talk about it. And I know you are really into, I don't want to say World War II history, but history.
I love history for sure. Yeah, definitely 20th century, big area of focus for me. But
all right.
I like ancient history too.
Absolutely. What sparks it for the 20th century for you?
When I was on the Warped Tour, I brought this copy of that William L. Shire, that American, wrote this book because he was living in Berlin during the 30s, and he wrote a book in 1960 called Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. And I read it, and I was just like, oh my God, it's like the Lord of the Rings, but it actually happened. And it's obviously, it's a, you know, the craziest, worst thing that's ever happened, but
Incredibly
captivating. Then from there, I just went back to like World War I and being like, oh my God. So like the world was just all these like crazy inbred kingdoms that collapsed. And like, I don't know, it caught me at the right time where I needed something to pacify my mind, sitting at those merch tables in those parking lots for hours, just kind of languishing in the sun. And you know, needed we weren't selling much merch, so I didn't have
Well, kids asked us if we had Monster Energy drink for sale.
Yep.
Or so, where the Asking Alexandria tent was.
Yeah. Where you drink water out of a can that's branded as a Monster Energy drink.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant, but brilliant. Horrible. So anyways, yeah, just caught me at the right time for sure.
Hell yeah. I also have a huge passion for mainly 20th century history, especially because of how it applies to now, how you can see these residual things constantly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And some of the stories, something I didn't really take into consideration until more recently is the personal stories of the people. So I was always like, I need to know, like, what was going on, why it happened. I don't really care about the intricate players, you know, that were involved. But you start realizing that it really is stranger than fiction in a lot of regards. Like, some of these people's lives were so fucking extraordinary.
Unreal.
Right. Like, when you start to zoom in,
yeah.
Like, have a look. Yeah.
Totally. And then you start to realize that there's people in your life that have some of these stories that, you know, you didn't get to, you would never have known if you didn't just, like, mention it in passing. When I first moved to Philly, I worked at a restaurant called the Warsaw Cafe, and it was run by an 86-year-old Polish woman who was put into, so a bunch of her family were killed by the Germans when they came in, and she was forced to be, I guess, for all, you know, ostensibly a slave to a German officer. So she had to learn how to cook, and that's where she learned a bunch of German food and how to do that, and then took all that and brought it to the States, but had countless stories. And she would just mention them in passing while making pierogies on like a Sunday morning.
Wow.
You start to realize how close all that shit is.
Yeah, definitely. That's wild.
Totally. It's definitely also, all that stuff is an antidote to your own grumblings, you know?
Yeah, it's a perspective.
I think that's the thing, the most profound thing that I get out of it especially, is just a complete perspective reset on the incredibly, you know, minuscule challenges that I face, comparatively speaking, in my life. You know, especially like, you know, going, 20th century history is captivating because we can the people can, we can relate to them. Their universe is obviously very, very different than ours and their time, but we can, some of them are still around. We can still talk to them.
Yeah.
Ancient history is much harder because it's just like, oh my God, like the Babylonians, damn, dude.
Yeah.
Like, but you know, it all lends itself to like, oh my God, I'm so glad I'm here at this time in this place rather than there.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Anytime I've had a big medical issue this year, and I was like, thank fucking God it's 2021.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I have to be dead. That shit's always wild to put that into perspective. And a lot of the same institutions that existed during those things are around today. So you can kind of just see. And there's so much information. So there's even film, audio. There's like, you know, motion picture. It's
color photography crazy. In a lot of like cases.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Exactly.
It's nice to be. You can look around and be like, oh, this is how we got here.
Yeah. It's super weird. Speaking of color photography, so how did you guys spark your photography interest? Like, where did that come from?
I've always been a big movie nerd, and when I went away to school, my grandfather gave me his old film camera. He was like, I don't use this. I took it to Mexico once. Just take it. Do your thing. Yeah. And I shot my first role there in the fall in New York City, and when I got it back, I was like, oh, shit. Okay, I'm just going to keep doing this.
And, yeah.
And the ball just kept rolling. And when I moved back home, I kind of turned it into a business. And I love it so much. It's mostly film photography. The digital stuff is, I like it, sure. But it's not as rewarding. I like getting film back. But yeah, I've always just like appreciated cinematography. And all of my favorite directors were photographers before they started making films. So, yeah, I think that was the translation there, and yeah. What about you, Kyle?
Yeah, like similar to you in a sense. I didn't get gifted a camera or anything, but we were on tour in Europe, and it was my first time being in Europe, and I was in Hamburg, and I was like, you know, I should probably take pictures. And I just went into like a shop in the Reeperbahn, and I was like, do you have disposable cameras? And he's like, yeah. So I just grabbed two.
Nice.
And then I took pictures the whole time, and You know, like Amanda Foetz, and
sure,
yeah, like she commented, she's like, "Hey, these are great," and I was like, "Oh, okay,
nice."
I'll take more photos, and then my friend Yoshi gave me an Olympus point and shoot, and was just like, "Here, have this," and then I was off, and I just got hooked on it.
Yeah, very cool. It's funny because everyone has a powerful camera in their pocket now. You know, like powerful enough to where you can document anything that you needed to document.
It's not as good.
It's not as good. No, you're at a fixed aperture. You got software kind of backing it all up. That's why I always gripe to my friends. But you can make stuff that looks really good and put it online and be really excited about yourself. And that led us to Instagram and led us to.
Well, I just feel with film.
Hell.
Yeah. All kinds of weird, twisted notions of our own egos.
Yeah.
But it is wild to have it. The reason I got into it is because my aunt was like, hey, do you have pictures from all these crazy places that you've been? And I realized that most of them were grainy, dark cell phone pictures inside of dressing rooms that all looked the same no matter where you were. So I was like, damn, I should probably learn this. And then realized, same, got my hands on a camera and was like, wow, this is a whole new world. It's funny you mentioned the reward because of the delayed, you know, gratification you get from film.
Oh,
you take so many pictures and then you have to wait so long before
every
you
time you
see
get
them.
Film back, it's like Christmas. And you're like, ugh.
Yeah, it makes you take much more mindful photos.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. I always feel like I'm actually capturing something.
Yeah.
Because you're like imprinting it on like a physical medium.
Weird chemical reaction.
Yeah. I can't just sit there and go like, okay.
Yeah,
I have to be like, oh, I hope this is good. Nothing is worse than when you get I get like viscerally upset when like I get a rollback and it's just like, I feel like I just took shit photos. I'll be like,
yeah,
fuck this.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
The worst. You're like, I just spent all that money.
Why'd I take, why do I take photos?
Sometimes it like one photo makes the roll though. And you're like, that was
worth
it.
That's true.
Yeah.
But then you take time, you step back. You know, you open that folder later and you're like, actually, you know what? These aren't that bad.
These are really kind of cool. Yeah.
Totally. Even if it's just documenting where you were then and remembering all the shit that you did at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a really fun process doing that because I did my first like photo zine this year.
Oh, cool.
And over the pandemic, I just like chipped away at it and took like a Magnum photography course on photographic storytelling, which was really, really fun. I learned a lot.
What's Magnum photography?
That's like... Magnum is like a collective, so they like Robert Capa was part of Magnum.
Cool.
It's been around for a while, so it's just like they're just like at the top, like in the upper echelon of
nice.
Like,
so you can check it out online and take the course if you wanted to.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Check it out online, and then they have like a store, so you can buy like official prints and stuff like that. There's a book that one of the photographers put out, Jonas Bendixson or something like that. He did this wild photo project, but he faked all the photos.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Love that. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, like he took all the photos, but all the people in it are fake.
Oh, okay.
So if you want to, it's like, it's called the Book of Veles, and he did it all in a town where it's a really deep, like, history. It's like all one theme for like faking stuff. So there's this town in Veles, I think in Norway, where all the kids didn't have jobs because their industry shut down, so they made all the fake news. Like, it's where a whole bunch of, like, fake news was produced.
Oh, so they just started, like, doing all Facebook articles about, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that they're named Veles because of these tablets that were found about this god called Veles. And it's called the Book of Veles, but then those tablets were also proven to be forgeries. So it's, like, layers and layers and layers of, like, forgeries. And he just wanted to, like, do this whole thing. And even all the words in it are, like, fabricated. He just pumped a bunch of stuff into an AI.
Yeah. Incredible.
But anyways, Magnum Photography is great.
Yeah.
And I made it. To get back what I was saying, I went through all my photos and got a new appreciation for older photos that I had taken.
That's awesome. Love yeah. that. And speaking of pandemic projects like that, you guys put out a record. Kudos to you. That's like, I know I had the conversation with lots of friends who had finished a record and was like, do we put this out while we can't tour? Do we wait for it? And you guys went for it. And I think that was, especially for your fans, you know, very appreciative, fucking awesome. What was that experience like compared to regularly putting on a record?
Well, it was definitely, I'm really, really glad that we did do it. Because it was something to do and to focus on. I will say that the people, our peers that at least I know that like have been sitting on a record forever are not in a good state.
Definitely.
At least with their, both with, all of them with their relationship with the record and a lot of them even with their relationship with their craft and existentially. I think sitting on, having sat on our first record for like a year and a half, like, I won't do that ever again. I don't care if
sure.
if we just have to put it up on SoundCloud or something. We just won't do that again. So I think that what we basically decided was like, well, let's go for a, you know, let's try, you know, let's try and see the opportunity here and the fact that obviously there's not going to be a lot of records released,
yeah.
especially in rock music,
truth.
Which is depending on touring. So, and then also let's double down on that Xanity by like, releasing on New Year's Day. So, I mean, we had a good long rollout. We were able to like capitalize on little windows within the pandemic where we could get together and make videos.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, we got it out. But I mean, most importantly for me, it was just being able to put it out so that I could immediately start writing songs again rather than like, you know, sitting on this record and like convincing myself, I don't have to write songs because like we still have this record, and then like letting all those chops deteriorate and like that you know, that stuff to go away. So
absolutely.
we just finished the record, and then like I just immediately got my ass back in gear.
Hell
which
yeah.
Which, you know, I it's hard for me to imagine moving on from a record without having released it yet, you know. So
yeah, it'd be a mind fuck.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. It's always a treat to get, or like it's the natural order of things, and I think the best case scenario to release a record at your peak enthusiasm for it, rather than like beyond that where you've really kind of been like, well, does it actually suck and all, like gone to all that, you know.
Yeah.
We didn't have any of that downtime or anything. We were just like, let's just put this thing out. And, you know, I'm very happy with the decision. It paid off.
Yeah, fuck yeah. I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but I kind of, well, I'm just smashing this table. I kind of feel that the reason that we wait so long after we write record, I mean, we write a record and then we wait, it doesn't come out for 8 months on average, I would say.
Yeah.
6 to 8 to 12 months. And I fucking hate that. I feel like it is some kind of leftover archaic idea or whatever from the music industry in the 80s and the 90s and the early aughts when you had physical records being sold and that was where their cash was coming from and all that. It just seems so bizarre to me to have something that is 100% digital that's going to be listened to 100% digitally and then sit and wait 6 to 8 months to put it out. I just don't understand why we still do that.
Yeah.
I mean, you do interviews and shit and you do press, but how long does that take?
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, like, it's just... It's the whole thing is funny, like as you mentioned, like the even just the way that, you know, money is made and stuff and generated from music, it's not really like it's not reflected in our relationship with how we make records and how we release records.
Exactly.
And, I think that the older that I've gotten, the less precious I feel about that stuff. I think it's just like, obviously, like we all make our money from playing live, right?
Exactly.
And so, like, you know, you make the best records that you can, you do your best job and be happy with it, but like, it's not the thing that you should do your nut over, like, yeah. And in terms of like,
hi, I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, this thing has to go perfect for this thing to go. You know, it's just like,
yeah.
All, and also like all of your favorite records have like mistakes and shit all over them too. It's never totally. Been easier to make a great sounding record. So
yeah, you can make it with your consumer electronics, you know?
Like, yeah.
You think that maybe it was Billie Eilish is like yeah. a pop star.
Yeah.
Her record was recorded by like Billie Eilish's brother on Logic on like a MacBook Pro. With like an SM57 or something like that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The majority of the record, not the whole thing. But it just goes to show, you can, we've been in studios where we have like, and there's like some meme about it that's really funny. You have hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of analog gear and all this stuff, and then it gets put out into a super compressed MP3 that someone listens to over the headphones that came with their phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, or like, off their computer.
Yeah. Exactly.
Or like whatever, just like off their laptop
speakers.
Yeah, like holding their phone up to their ear for the first 10 seconds, like, oh, cool.
Sounds good.
Like,
I heard that her brother actually just walked around the city and took voice memos of sounds happening and just inserted it into the record.
That's pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, super easy.
So
super easy.
Super easy
to make music.
So easy. And just waiting 6 months so you can get a proper schedule just seems so bizarre. And I yeah. think that a lot of newer artists are, they just release shit when they're done at the studio. Like, I've seen people drop songs at like 1 a.m. that they were working on all day, and then just that goes to hundreds of millions of people.
I love like, that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty great. It does add in a little bit, I think, to like the fleeting nature of so much of the shit that we do. You know, when you start talking about music as like the C word, content, instead of like a song or whatever, you're like, hey, you got to keep it rolling.
Yeah, definitely.
I guess that could get dangerous that way, but.
Mm.
Well, that's always tough, right? Because it's like, when is there enough? The answer is there's never enough.
Yeah.
you're always not doing enough. Everyone will tell you that like immediately.
Exactly.
But I don't know. I guess it's like, I think there's like kind of an old feeling that everything is so precious.
Yeah.
But with the internet and stuff, like there, it's just going to go.
Yeah,
and like
fleeting.
It's up there and it's gone. So just, you have to keep it rolling.
Absolutely.
And you might as well just put it out, because what are you being precious about? You're going to release it eventually.
Yeah.
People are going to like it or they're not going to like it. That result's not going to change.
And you can have a 6 month period and who knows what's going to happen in that 6 months. You know, there might be three bands that sound just like you that all released the record on the same day.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be a nightmare. Shit.
Right. Luke, you mentioned something that I wanted to jump back on about writing new music while you're waiting.
Yeah.
To release the other music. And I wonder if that ever gets, for me it's happened where it's gotten to the point where I started to treat writing music as work or as like something, like a task that had to be done, and mm-hmm. I'm not doing it for the sake of doing it because of that. And I was wondering what is going on with you.
I've certainly
psychologically when you're writing again after already writing.
Well, yeah, I mean, like honestly, I've definitely had long periods where I was just like, this fucking sucks. Like, I am not happy doing this. I am doing this because, like, we have to do this. And it's not so much of, like, a feel. It's just, like, it's just a psychological game with myself where it's, like, if I can just, like, relax and enjoy this, like, I'll make good shit. I know I can. Like,
yeah.
I know, like, but it just becomes a thing where you're, especially if I let those kind of like those chops atrophies, yeah. like, or atrophy, but like usually that, like letting those chops atrophy is like, that just means that I'm just thinking too much, you know?
Sure.
And like the best, I get my best writing done when I'm just not thinking, like when I'm just doing. Where I'm just playing guitar and just being like, I like this. Here's the thing. I'm going to roll with this. I'm going to write some words. I'm going to write a song. Boom. Like,
yeah. Pressure off.
Yeah, my favorite songs I've ever written, though. I wrote really, really fast. I mean, like, that's a bit biased, too, because, like, they're the most painless.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah,
that's you put that, I never thought of it that way before, because there is a romantic notion that great things come, good things take time.
Sometimes.
And great things come
all
at once.
Yeah, I mean.
It's a sometimes thing. It's not a rule.
I think it's also just, like, an inherent bias, though, because it's just, like, it wasn't, like, pulling teeth and it didn't get revised and all that. You know, it's just like.
Well, it's like those feelings, like, you know, when you and I are, like, working on stuff and then, like, it all just comes together and we can just like smile at each other and be like, yeah, there it is.
Yeah, I love that moment.
It's great. It's when something's like, yeah. And I the last bit, I like during the pandemic, like when I kind of got back to just working on stuff for us to play, basically I started using GarageBand again, which I haven't since I was like 16.
Yeah,
and I've really loved doing that. Like I wrote a bunch of tunes because it was just like, what do I have to do today? Okay, well, I have to wake up, make a pot of coffee, put on my sweatpants, eat an edible, and then just sit at the fucking computer with my fucking Les Paul until I can't do it anymore. And then it was just the best. Yeah. It was awesome. I loved it, honestly. I really enjoyed having a little bit of time off of like the cycle of what we've kind of been used to, which is basically like, you know, tour, writing the whole time, record an album, and then like I would just be like, all right, I'm done my job for a while, and then just like we'd tour the hell out of that and I'd have to like start from scratch again. But I've just learned the hard way now. It's just like, just don't, never stop writing.
Yeah,
like, you just never stop. Totally. Because also like doing it this way, like having just got right back on it, made me really reconnect with like, I like this, and it's inside me to determine whether, as you said, where when it feels like a job and you're just like, I just got to put the biscuit in the basket.
Yeah,
that mentality of like, I got to get this task done, to like, this is a cool riff. I like this riff. You know, like I want to take this further. Like
this riff exists in this moment where I am.
Yeah, exactly.
Weighted by all of the other parts of life.
Yeah, exactly. And so I've had more fun making music, like after making Fuck Art than I have in a long time.
Oh, that's great to hear.
Yeah.
I love that. I wanted to zoom in a little bit on, you mentioned GarageBand quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So personally, I had this whole, we've been there, big studio setup at my house. I should have showed you guys last night, but it's just like a desk with some monitors and I have like an interface and stuff. And I was always like, yeah, well, I have to use these plugins to get this thing going and do this. But over the last, since the beginning of this tour, actually, I bought a little thing I could plug into my iPad. It's got a multi connector on it. So you can put in a quarter inch or a microphone. So you can plug a guitar into it or a microphone.
Yeah.
And it plugs into an iPad and I downloaded GarageBand and I have not been this prolific with a simple thing that anybody listening to this can go and download if you have a Mac. I don't know if you could use it on a PC, but there's definitely something similar. But it's like the easiest multi-track recorder that you can have. And just plugging into that made it so easy. So I was wondering what your writing setup is like. Do you go right down a GarageBand, just keep it super easy?
Recently, that's just what I've been doing. Yeah, I just like just get my guitar and like have those, like, you know what, I didn't even download the extra drummers. I use like the one drummer guy and I'm just like, do this one, do doots, do doots, do doots. And, or the halftime version, that's it. Like, and then I just like, I have, you know, I'll kind of play around on my acoustic, and then, but usually I'll just plug my guitar straight in with the headphones and just like start making things over it, and then like immediately after that, what I've realized is just like, just don't stop until it's basically until you really kind of feel like you've hit a wall. But like especially with vocals, I find that if I get too far away from like the original idea, it's a real pain in the ass to try and get myself back into trying to match the music with my voice.
Yeah.
So I really try and get the music and the vocals together in unison as much as possible. But a lot of the music, like I'll get a basic idea that way, but like most of the music comes together from like just responding to what Kyle does on drums. Like I'll bring in a riff, or sometimes Kyle's just playing drums a certain way, I'm like, that's sick, and then I'll start playing over, and then we'll you know. But like, I mean, all of you know, my favorite music that we've done is usually just from it's from getting a good sound in the room rather than like, okay, listen up, fuck faces. I wrote this song. We got to find all your places within it. Like, yeah. I much, much more prefer like doing it together in a way that the bass sounds are already great. And yeah. then I can, you know, write the lyrics and the music on top of what Kyle's doing more or less. Because like, that way, honestly, that way, it just like it's always more rocking that way.
Oh, totally. I feel like you could bring it back to don't let the music get in the way of a good show.
Yeah,
in the sense that the final product or the final incarnation of the song that you're working on is going to be the most important. It's going to be is when you're playing it in front of people. That's how you get paid. That's like what the most fun thing is. That's like how you keep moving. So many times where Greg or myself will come up with something, GarageBand, Logic, Pro Tools, whatever. We bring like a, not a finished song, but something that has a drum beat and shit behind it. It always is fully lacking the energy, vibe, and creative shit that everybody else brings to the table. Because we only do the good shit when it's in the room being hashed out. And you know, everybody's good for processes. Some people, we toured with, talk a little shit, we toured with a band that will remain nameless where the person who's in charge of the band, you know, wrote everything on their own, and one time they were in a fight backstage and they said, remember, everyone is expendable, and then like stormed off, and we were like, damn,
that's a horrible
shit to your friends.
That's
I don't want to play in that band.
Yeah,
no way.
Dude,
that's crazy.
It's like working at Tim Hortons there.
I always think that's like a myth, but then I guess you just forget when you have like bands that are pretty communal.
Yeah, totally.
But it's not like that.
So we've taken that and made it into an ironic mantra oftentimes when like things get too tense or something.
Like, remember, everyone's
remember, everyone's expendable.
Yeah.
No matter how serious
I'm going to make you a bunch of shirts that say that.
Remember.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to steal. We're going to steal that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, I mean, like, you know, that's the funnest rock and roll. Like, rock and roll is like, it's a bunch of instruments together, you know, rather than, I mean, the best sounding recordings and stuff and arrangements are, it's when, you know, there's a good, you know, I hate the V word, but a good vibe happening. And it's not trying to reverse engineer it is like a real challenge. And you never quite even, it doesn't matter how hard you work. Like songs always in my experience end up the best when you've got like a good stomping like verse groove all together, even before even a word is written or something. And it's just like, okay, this is sick. I can just fucking dance on top of this with my voice. It's gonna be easy. Hell but like, rather than be like, okay, so it's A to C on my acoustic guitar. Like, can you come up with some good shit, man? Yeah. Like it's really
I'm praying for you to save this song.
Yeah, exactly. Like this is a very forget, you know, we've done it all different ways, but the best way, the funnest way, and the like is to make music that's designed to be played live, you know.
Oh yeah.
Oh, for sure. And that's the always the final test, which was really interesting for us about Fuck Art, is that we didn't really get to road test very much of it.
Sure.
So it was actually kind of funny because we felt like we had to learn the songs to play them live.
It was like Saint Anger.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, it was like Saint Anger. Yeah, the Fuck Art's are Saint Anger.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I still so that there's their documentary about that record, right?
Or yeah, some kind of monster.
Okay. So we've watched it on like on tour a couple times, we've been on at parties. I've never seen the whole thing, but I just love like hearing snippets of it from everyone when they talk about it.
We're obsessed with it.
I've seen it like 10 times, I think.
Yeah. So I expected everybody to leave it making fun of Metallica and being like, what a bunch of chodes, but everyone I've talked to is like, well no, by the end you're kinda like you can relate to everyone on like a deep level in some way.
Yeah, well,
I can be wrong.
They're going through it.
Yeah.
But at the, you know, maybe like the first time you're like, what the hell is this? Because they're so intense and it's like a lot. It's very raw. But then once you get through it, you're like, well, they really put themselves out there and just like stood behind it.
Yeah.
And a lot of bands don't do that. Like,
that's
think
true.
About like.
Talk shit on it.
Before. Yeah. Like anytime, like, I don't know, a book comes out about Led Zeppelin, they'll be like, none of that happened. And it's just like, own it. Just,
yeah, exactly.
Just be like, I don't know, it's like a genuine thing, and you don't really get that from a band at that level. Like, I mean, Metallica's at the like fucking top,
totally,
and they're gonna be like, yeah, we're like broken pieces of shit sometime, humans, you know.
Yeah, it's quite a story, and so much of the lore and the idea of what we're doing even revolves around a story, like, you know, our hardcore fans want to know the story about the band and the bands and like what people are involved in and shit. And it's weird to me to think about how do you curate that, like a true story of yourself, whether you're talking with you guys on a podcast or if you made a documentary or like what the answers to the questions that you give for interviews when a new record comes out and shit. It's just kind of weird. I always think of it as wanting to be ourselves the best that we can, but you end up inevitably, you know, Brendan Kelly gave us really good advice one time. He said that it was the first time we were taking like promo pics for a magazine. This is like, I don't know, 12, 14, 13 years ago or something. And he was like, somebody was holding something in the picture. And he's like, don't hold it because we'll always pick the one where you're holding the fucking rubber chicken. And I was like, oh yeah, the journalists are always going to pick out whatever is the not normal, whatever is like could catch anything.
Yeah, like, ooh, what's the wacky one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he's holding the chicken. He's the weird guy.
Yeah.
The funniest like thing to me still is like, and again, it's just like it's part of my job. I fully accept it. But it still every time just seems absurd to me where we'll put out a song and the press will hit me up for a quote about the song. I'm like, that's your fucking job. Like, I you can say it's shit, whatever, but why do I have to be like, well, this is a song about, like, I don't know. Like, it just strikes me as strange that this is, like, an ascent, like, this is part of, do you have to do that? Like, where you have to
oh,
give.
Oh, yeah. So we we'll always try to either humor it and be like, okay, this is something about the song. But I don't mind it at all when someone, the song, they've clearly done some thinking about it instead of being like, you know how when you do an interview with somebody and they clearly have no idea about your band.
So how'd you guys start?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
So where'd the band
Messengers,
name come from?
Yeah. You guys are from Chicago? And we're like, no, that happens, you know, God bless them, but with the Germans a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You just gotta start fucking with those ones.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just started doing it in German interviews drunk.
Yeah. That's a good policy. But yeah, we've done that. I really do respect when a journalist comes to the table with something. We're like, hey, I noticed you said this in here. Is that a reference to this song? Or this is what this means to me. How do you think of it? And then you could have a conversation.
Yeah, yeah. But when people are like, hey, say something about this song. It's a song by our shit. Yeah. Like, that's, I don't know.
Starts in A.
I have no problem being our own, like, our own propaganda minister and saying, you know, giving them something that is you know, fun and but at the same time every time I just think about it I'm like, this is just this is a very strange way this works. I don't know.
Yeah, strange dance.
Yeah, it's a bit,
because you have to do it.
Oh yeah. You can't just be like, fuck you, dude, do your job, dude.
Because even saying fuck you, do your job, dude is a version of that.
That's the quote. Yeah,
yeah, that's the quote. So, if I said your own propaganda minister, I'm gonna take that.
Yeah,
or your own spin doctor. That's cool.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. It's the I don't know. That's like, there's obviously a lot of drawbacks of being in a rock band in the 21st century. But I will say that if you're willing to do it, you have a shitload and basically of just like ultimate control about every aspect of your presentation. It's just an extension of your band, and that's cool. But you have to be willing to do more work. So here I am sitting complaining about this shit, but like at the same time, it's great having just like total control over the whole thing.
Sure, and then we're kind of answered it already. That's what I was wanted to ask, was what is the story? You know, like, I get a vibe from you guys, you know, to use the dreaded V word, a vibe of you guys in the story that you do tell when it comes to like public facing or social media kind of shit like that. But I wonder how much thought goes into it that you guys actually talk about it out loud, or you just kind of roll with it?
I think that a lot of what we're trying to do is just like is trying to make each other laugh, like with what we do. I think that we have extremely little tolerance for serious, like, for like ultra self serious rock music, like guitar music in 2021. Shit, like,
that's for other bands for sure.
Yeah, it's for other bands. And we tried it, I think, earlier on. We were just like, maybe we could be like this. And then my the lyrics that I write are not like that. I mean, and are just general who we are as people is, we're the kids that blew things up in the woods. Yeah. Like, you know,
now we make loud music
too, a little bit. It would be kind of fun to just be in a band that does have like a full theatrical kind of, I don't know, shtick, I guess. Like,
what, if you're
like
in the Ghost
Outlast or something. Yeah, yeah. Like Ghost or
I don't know. I don't like their something. Music, but they have a crazy.
Yeah, just having that would be really funny. I think that's some like theater that school kid shit though. Some like, you know, theater kids real like putting it out there.
Oh yeah, like the Tubes.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the tubes?
Loosely.
Yeah. That's some mental stuff.
Dude, love it. Speaking of blowing up shit in the woods, did you guys, so what was your, we were talking about this the other night, so I gotta bring it up. We have a funny story of a friend who, we used to make works bombs, chlorine bombs, like all the shit that was like accessible in the Anarchist Cookbook. Nothing like, I'm not talking like gunpowder shit, I'm talking like you mix the works, which was like a dollar store chemical that reacted with aluminum foil. So you'd close them up in a like a soda bottle and they would just explode and it would be really fun.
Sick.
We had a friend recently, we were bringing this story back up, they would sink them in a public pool at nighttime. They would like climb the fence and like sink them down. So it'd be like kaboom. And one day one of them didn't blow up and they were like, ah, shit, okay. So they left and then the next morning the lifeguards came in, they sent some kid down to get it and he like grabbed it. And this is, you know, could have been really bad. But they like put it out by a shed and then it ended up exploding like later. And it was all over the news. It was like a whole thing. And they were like, somebody is bombing the park. And I was like, no, it was actually just somebody fucking around.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeez.
Damn.
We did things of that ilk, but we're much more softcore than like we had people that we knew that were reading the Anarchist Cookbook and doing that shit, but like they're all in jail now.
Yeah,
we
sure.
were more like
that's a good point.
Go to the convenience store, buy as many sparklers as you can, like
yeah.
take it out into the deep woods and
yeah.
give it a try.
Yeah, yeah, blow up an action figure.
Stuff caps into stuff.
Yeah.
Roman candles.
Buy lighter fluid and just light shit on
fire. That's a
fire.
Crucial one. Yeah, I feel like there's a bridge directly from blowing up fireworks in the woods and setting things on fire to having an 8-speaker guitar cabinet and playing chords really loud.
I think so.
There's
a there is a direct line. There was a couple incidents that brought us close to our maker that I was like, you know what, maybe let's just get further into this music thing because I really, really, really scorched my hand with burning plastic at one point.
Oh, no. Jesus.
There was like, I emptied all the contents of a Roman candle out into a garbage can and threw a match in it. And then like, I just woke up in the snow and I couldn't really see very well.
Jesus.
And there was just like smoke coming off of my parka. And I'm like, I felt like Kenny from South Park. And I'm like, let's stop this. Yeah.
You couldn't get enough though, because you just put smoke bombs in your guitar.
Yeah, I did that for a while. It kind of stopped working, but yeah, we got out of the homemade fireworks game.
Yeah, yeah. Transitioned.
We transitioned.
Made it out alive.
Yeah,
yeah.
I also remember holding a firecracker that like went off very close to my head, and I'm like,
oh, yeah,
I think I'm not very good at this.
Is like, that one of those? I remember I found like my dad had all these random bottle rockets, and I just was like, I'm gonna take these, you could like light it off the stick, and then just like. Whip it.
Oh, yeah. Stick it in a piece of PVC piping or something.
Oh, yeah. We would take like Roman candles and tie it to a swing and then run, like swing it.
Yeah.
And then just everyone's got to run and dodge it. And like, dude, we'd put like cherry bombs in garbage cans just to see what would happen.
Yeah.
Just be like smoke everywhere.
Like three times as loud. We had a guy that would come around and he had like a spreadsheet that he printed out. And you'd place an order of what you wanted. And then he would drive down to like, it was like our friend's dad's friend. And he would drive down to like the Carolinas where all the big fireworks were legal and then just drive them back up and give them to everybody at like 100% markup or whatever.
That's a good hustle.
Good hustle. Yeah.
What do you do? I sell fireworks to kids. Hustle.
Yeah.
In my spare time.
Wow, I'd never really thought about that. We were like 13. This was like a grown 40-year-old man.
I sell explosives to kids. Yeah.
Well, just last year.
What was his name?
We filled a van with fireworks. Hundreds of them.
Oh, yeah, for the Doom Boy video.
Dude,
that was us coming back.
How much fun was that?
Oh,
it was
sick.
It was awesome.
Yeah, my dad found my dad's a mechanic and a bunch of his friends like wreck like scrap cars.
What does that mean?
They'll
salvage them.
They'll salvage them, yeah.
Metal and shit, cool.
And they get drunk and I was like, hey, do you think you can find us a caravan? My dad's like, sure. And he found like the perfect one. So I'm like, cool. We just like fucked it up. And it was great. We took one of those big, like, square, like, 100 and whatever shot one.
Yeah.
We put, like, two of those in there.
Inside.
And just, so like, awesome. Lit it all off.
And did you just go find a field?
It's actually at my like a relative of mine's. They have like a have like a big property, so we just did it all back there. I remember though, I thought we had road flares going off. One of them got the window so hot that the window exploded on the van. But I went on the roof to light them and like light fireworks, but like I couldn't get this one thing to light, and I just was inhaling road flare, and then I was like. So I definitely am going to get lung cancer from that.
Some real random weird one.
We were actually going to fire like kind of like a Civil War era cannon at the van, but the guy who owned it was too drunk to make the cannon work.
Yeah.
I just pictured
it's probably for the best.
Yeah, definitely probably for the best.
Yeah, I think if it wasn't for that bottle of Jack Daniels, I think we would have all been on the news that night or the next day. Yeah.
I just keep picturing that viral video. It's like somebody's last ride. I think it's real far Eastern Canada, and they have this guy super wasted, and they put him on like a go-kart, and he takes it off of an enormous jump. It's hard to describe.
I've never seen this.
Oh, man, I gotta look it up.
It's
fucking hilarious. They just get this guy super wasted. He goes off of an enormous jump. Like he's like 10, 12 feet in the air, and then he just hits the ground. But I think he was so drunk that his muscles had no chance of like tightening up. So he's like that, like, you know, you don't get injured when you're super wasted because you can't tense up and you're just like a rag doll.
Yeah.
You just like go with the flow.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to find that.
Go-karts, not known for their suspension.
No.
So any plans to blow anything up in the future?
Always.
Probably, yeah.
What do you guys have coming up after this run with us?
We've got some headlining shows. We got a few dates in Canada. And then we have some shows down here in the States, kind of in the same Northeast market.
Hell yeah. And where's the best place to check out the dates?
You can check that out on our Instagram, on our website, thedirtynil.com/shows.
It's a perfect face.
Yeah. No one can see what I'm doing. I'm like being very animated about it.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you guys so very much for coming on. We're coming close to an hour. I really appreciate
it. Thank you so much for having us on, Tom.
The only second worst question I can think of that you get asked when you're doing like an album cycle or whatever, besides, you know, what does the song mean, is this question. You have anything else to say?
Yeah. Mm. Oh, I hate that. Mm. I hate. Is there anything that you'd like to say, or
you want
to
add anything?
What's your favorite band?
Just the mispronounce of your band, and then what's the best show you've ever played? That's another one.
What are some crazy things that have happened on tour?
yeah. Like, well, I'm gonna get the dirt today, and you're like, got pretty drunk two nights ago.
Yeah, still feeling it. Probably get drunk tonight, so I don't feel it anymore.
Yeah.
Just keep it going. Just keep it going.
Until it comes to crashing down at the end.
Yeah. Until our significant others scrape us off the pavement that we get dumped off at when the tour van opens. Yeah.
And then have a serious conversation over a cup of coffee.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, on that note, I appreciate it, and I can't wait to finish out these shows with you guys.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be so fun.
Tom means the world, man. Yeah. Thanks, Tom, for bringing us out.
Hell yeah. And there we have a conversation with the Dirty Nil. The intro song is Not the Only One by The Chisel. The outro song is by Pat Breyer, Queen Jesus. Thank you so much to Beth and Nani for helping to produce the episode, and thank you so much to the Dirty Nil for coming on with me, and we'll see you next time.
Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.